Blog Talk Radio.
About, give me some straight funk. Look here, when I say straight, you say funk. Straight
funk.
Straight
funk.
Hey, that's what I'm talking about. No chases. We do it for real right here. We keep it authentic right here. You
right.
are tuned in to Everybody Is a Star, and this is Patrice Chocolate Banks, your funkstress for the night. And I want to thank you so much for joining us. Thank God it's Friday. You know what I'm saying? I don't know about y'all, but I'm like Sly. I feel so good inside myself. I don't want to move, okay? So having said that, we're going to get this thing rolling, okay? Now, I made a post on the Facebook that I'm just going to read that's going to describe what's happening tonight on the show. So inspired by the documentary 20 Feet from Stardom, I decided to pick up where that documentary left off. Now, the documentary was accurate as far as the experience of the quote-unquote background chick singers, but fell short in representing the complete story. That was the beginning, but there are so many more who continue to support quote-unquote stars of today. And these stars cannot shine without the glow that emits from those who stand behind, next to, and with them, okay? Having said all this, I'm going to introduce you to some of these divas. Now, about maybe a month ago, I started out this series with my sister friend Paula Michelle, and I'm going to continue with this week's guest. Now, this week's guest is a singer, a songwriter, a producer, an actress, candlestick maker, butcher, baker, everything. Everything. She has worked with Marvin Gaye, Ray Charles, Barry White. You know, just a diva that y'all need to know. Y'all need to know who she is. If you don't know, you need to know. And on top of that, she is my good friend. So without further ado, I would like to introduce to you Miss Sydney Wang. What up, Sid?
Hey, girl. Oh, I love you, chocolate. You know I love some chocolate. You my girl. You my sister for real. Thank you for having
for
me.
For real. Well, I'm glad that you could be with me tonight and with us. And I hope everybody has their pencils and paper out because they know how I roll. They know how we do it here on Everybody is a Star. Funk 101 is now in session. So we're going to start from the beginning, okay? We're going to start from where you hail from, where'd you come from. Let's give us some insight on, you got to shout your schools out for sure. That's what you have to do for sure. Okay, so you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
Okay,
well,
let's go.
Where I'm originally from is West Virginia, so I give a shout out to, you know, the place I was born, where most of my family, my mother's side, lives. I lived there till I was about seven. Then I grew up in a little town in Ohio. So I give a shout-out to Kenton, Ohio, and all of my friends and my family that helped to raise me from a young girl into a woman. And that's where I first started singing, was in my church home, and I got the confidence there. Then I was also very active in my school choir, got confidence there. Like that show Glee, I was in the Glee Club, you know. And so as I, you know, went on in Toledo, Ohio, where I went to college, the University
of
Toledo.
Well, wait a minute. Wait. Let's shout out to school. What school did you go to?
University of Toledo.
Mm-hmm. What about
Kenton Senior High School in Kenton. That's where I graduated. Yes,
okay.
Ma'am.
And weren't you, I heard a rumor that you were the homecoming queen.
What? I was not only the homecoming queen, but just to make it funky, I was the first and still only black homecoming queen of Tennessee.
All right,
Odyssey.
Now.
And I'm very proud
all
of that.
Right. All
it,
right.
It just shows the kind of the people that they just looked at me and saw me.
Mm-hmm.
And I
so, how many, we hear some, we got some background noises going on here. I don't know what's happening. But, BBJ, I think that's BBJ. BBJ.
Oh, well, okay. Let's use that diaphragm and talk over her chocolate. Did she figure it out?
So, check this. I don't think we can talk over it. It doesn't seem
oh
like
goodness.
It. But let's give it a try.
Okay.
Because she really doesn't know that she is, don't even know that she's being heard at this point.
Okay.
So I'm kind of thrown off. I'm going to get it together. I'm going to reel it back in, though. So now, how many people do you think was in your town, in your little town of Canton, Ohio?
Oh.
What was the population?
It was under 10,000. So I think the time I was there, it was like maybe about 8,500. And I think now they might be closer to 10,000. But, yeah, that was about it.
Wow, so... So we are actually talking a small town.
Yeah.
I heard that. Like me. I came from a little old bitty town. I don't even know if they have 10,000 today. So, okay. So now homecoming queen. So you sang.
Yeah.
Of course, music was in the schools at that time. So I'm sure anything
mm-hmm.
that had to do with music, you were involved in it.
I was the president of our choir. I was in our glee club called Top 20. I was very active. I did the musicals, the plays. I actually played in my senior year in Fiddler on the Roof. And I wasn't going to audition for a part because I felt there was nobody black in there. And my director, he said, Sydney, he said, don't bother me. He said, I want you to sing this song. And it was the character Hoddle. She sang a beautiful song called Far From the Home I Love. When he played that song for me, I auditioned for the part and got it. So, you know, I was in the musical. I was playing a black Jewish girl. So.
I heard that.
You know, and that encouraged me that, you know, that there weren't any barriers. That, you know, I could put a barrier in my own mind. But this man taught me, Mr. Smith, James Smith. He was my choir director in school, and he really encouraged me to see beyond that and to see that I could pretty much do anything, and that really helped me.
Okay, very good, and that's important in these days and times. Okay, so now, so you sang in church, right, of course?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So now... what were your first musical influences? Was it church or music like you heard around the house?
It was church. It really was. Because for some reason it was music that we heard on the radio because of the town we lived in. We listened to a radio station, I think it was out of Chicago, that it played a variety of music like Top 40. So we listened to the Beatles. We heard some of the Motown acts, but some of the funkier and more soulful artists didn't always get played on this radio station. So my older sister Shirley, when she would come to visit us, she would say, "What? You ain't got no James Brown. You ain't got no Aretha Franklin." She would go out and buy these records and like, "You need to listen." So we got my sister Shirley kind of helped shape our more modern sense of music and what was out there. And then the rest was what we learned in church.
Okay. So now, when did you realize that music was your calling, that singing was what you were supposed to do? When did it first hit you?
I was very young, about 3 years old. I was hearing Judy Garland sing Somewhere Over the Rainbow. I was very little. And I heard that sound, and that little melody was simple and it stayed in my head. And I remember standing on top of, I think it was probably my sister's bed with the brush and trying to sing that song. And everybody thinking I was cute. So I think I got the whole bug at that age, trying to sing it and trying to emulate in front of the mirror and then having an audience, my family going, ooh, and clapping for me. So it started very young. I was like, oh, I like this.
Right, right. So now, how old were you when you first sang in church?
I was very shy up until I was about 12. I sang my first solo. Now, I started singing in church. I guess they put a choir together in my hometown of Kenton. I think I was probably maybe about 10. And then, you know, I learned how to sing harmony, and I would kind of blend, and a couple times they put me in a little trio, but I'd never sung a solo until I was 12 years old. And then they gave me a solo, it was like 3 words long. But I got so nervous when my solo came and my voice came out, and I just sounded like a little, like an ant, you know, it sounded so small. And I was so scared. My knees were knocking. I really had severe stage fright. And then that same Sunday, they brought up some little boy group, kind of like three of the members of Jackson 5. And these little boys were young, and they were singing, and they weren't shy. And this little boy who was like 8 years old was singing a solo. He was just killing it. And then I got jealous, and I was like, oh, no, wait a minute. He's only 8, and I'm 12. And so it was just like stage fright. I just got over it. So the next time I had a solo, I took the mic, and I was and they're looking at me like, where did that come from? And it was weird because it came from this competition of this younger singer, like, oh, he's not going to beat me. I'm 12.
Right.
I should be able to do this. It was like, whatever I was nervous about, I forgot about it just back then.
Okay. I heard that, and I know you did, too. Okay, so now, what made you decide to go to, where'd you say you went to college?
University of Toledo.
Okay, so what made you decide to go there?
I really liked working with kids, and I had decided I wanted to be a teacher, and they had a really good college of education. They had a wonderful record of preparing teachers for the real world of, you know, being a teacher in a school system, and they really had a wonderful program, and so I really appreciate that. And I graduated, and I started teaching school in Toledo after I graduated.
Okay. And I know that was a lot of fun for the kids because I know you, and I know you love kids, and I know that they love them some Miss Davis, didn't
they? Miss Davis, and I'm still Miss Davis, isn't that something? I want to give a shout out to all my students from St. Angela Hall in Toledo, Ohio.
All right. So now, what happened that you transitioned from the Miss Davis to the person, the diva that you are today? How did that happen? When did you get your first call to your gig or whatever? What happened to make you transition into
your career? While I was living in Toledo, I was playing with a band. We were called Westbound Extension, and I really thought we were going to go somewhere with this band. There was a lot of strong, hot bands coming out of Ohio, and I was teaching school. And things in the band just kind of dissipated because we all didn't have the mindset of taking it to the next level. But my students encouraged me because I was always singing. I was always singing to them to the point that they would say, oh, Miss Davis, we're good. Will you sing to us? That kind of thing. And then they said to me, they said, Miss Davis, we don't know what you're doing here teaching us. You a voice like that, you need to go to Hollywood, girl. And then I said, yeah, I'll do that. And three of my boys that summer wouldn't let it alone. They rode their bikes to my school because they heard that I was going to take on teaching the fifth grade. And they said, Miss Davis, You said you was gonna go to Hollywood. What you doing? You can't teach fifth grade next year. You need to go. And they said, so what you gonna do? And they were sitting on their bikes looking up at my window, and I just was so ignited. Like, I felt like God had sent me a clear message. I said, boys, I'm going to Hollywood. And mm-hmm. I did. And 6 months later, I was on tour with Marvin Gaye.
Well, so now when you came to Hollywood, did you know anybody? Because, you know, so I hear so many stories of people coming to L.A., coming to Hollywood, so, you know, chasing that dream and not knowing anybody and having about $50 in their pocket. You know what I'm saying? So was that you? Did you know somebody? Or were you
I was blessed. My godmother lived out here. And so, you know, when I came out, I stayed with her, Donna Van Tassel, that's my godmother, and she put me up and, you know, and helped me get through those first few months. You know, at least I had a roof over my head.
Mm-hmm. And that was unusual because, like I said, they just come from all over the world with about $50 in their pocket and a hope and a prayer. You know what I'm saying? So, okay, so now you're in Hollywood. So what was your first step? How did you decide to go about becoming this star?
Well, you know, I was working a job and just, you know, I got my own place. So I started working as a makeup artist for Barbara Walton Cosmetics. I was doing that. And then I got a job at Target. So I was working my job. But I thought, I don't know anybody out here really. And when I would meet people, they say they're musicians. Everybody wanted to get paid before they talked to you. I said, hey, I want to put a band together. They're like, well, how much are you paying for rehearsals? I'm like, what? So that was new to me. So I looked into songwriting classes, and I thought, well, I could really work on that gift because I felt like that's a key to anything in the music industry. What I kept hearing that it is the power in a great song. And I thought, okay, well, let me work on that part. And so I took a songwriting class through the American Guild of Authors and Composers. I think now it's just called Songwriters Guild. And I had a wonderful teacher, this guy named Jack Siegel. And when I took the class, at the time, my favorite song was When Sunny Gets Blue. I just thought it was so amazing. And so I'm taking this class, and this guy comes out, and he's talking about songwriting and this and that. And then he says, and you're probably wondering who I am and what authority I have to stand on. He said, well, I wrote a little song you may have heard. It's called When Sunny Gets Blue. And he talked about how many people have recorded a song. And my mouth was on the floor because that was my favorite song. I just thought it was the most amazing lyric and melody. And I thought, now God put me in a class with the man that that wrote this song, and he's teaching me. So I felt very blessed, you know. So that's how I just got started, you know, working on my songwriting. And doing open mics around town, you know, just letting people hear I could sing and working on my writing.
Okay. So now you said it took, after you had been here 6 months, you got your first gig with Marvin Gaye, correct?
Yeah.
So tell us how that happened.
Oh, you know, it was a wonderful, like a fairy tale story for me, but you know, I was working this little job at Target, and then this friend of mine told me that he was working security for the Grammy Awards, and he knew I was into singing, and did I want to, he said he could sneak me in. I was like, what? So I called in sick to Target, girl, got all dressed up. I had a pretty little white dress, and these little white pumps, and I was rocking it, and my little rhinestones on it. And so I went there, and he told me where to park and where to stand. And so he slipped me in. And then another friend of mine was there, and he gave me a pass. He said, well, you better hold on to this in case they ask you for a pass or something. But it was only for a limited area. So I was like, okay, so I was in. And I was seeing all these big stars and just trying to be cool about it. And then people were looking at me, and back then, the way I wore my hair, people thought I was one of the members of the Jackson family. A lot of people thought I was Janet. And I would hear them say, oh, that's one of them Jacksons. And so I just kept walking further and further in. So I went way past where this little pass I had. I was all the way, like, in there, and all these big stars. Girl, I met Lena Horne that night. And she was walking with Andy Williams, and I could have just melted on the floor. And I just started trembling, and she came and she hugged me. And I said, I just love you. And she said, I love you too, baby. And, girl, I couldn't even talk. I was so blown by Lena Horne. And then Andy Williams was like, come on, come on, Lena. And then and she was blowing kisses to me, walking away with him. And I thought, oh, my God. Then I turn around, and I see all these people crowded on the side and didn't know Marvin Gaye was, for the first time, being honored with a Grammy for Sexual Healing. And so okay. I'm standing right there in the wings when it happens. And so I'm like, wow, that's Marvin Gaye. And he just got an award, and all these people are cheering. And then he's coming off the stage, and the press is coming around, and there's all these people. And then there's this little girl standing next to me. And now I'm trying to get in the right position to at least say hi to Marvin Gaye. You know, I mean, I'm in a good place, all crowded in. And this little girl starts talking to me. She said, ooh, I like your shoes. Look, I can wear your shoes. Can I wear your shoes? And I'm like, and I'm thinking, kid, I'm trying to talk to Marvin Gaye. And so I can't say no to a child. So she's like, look at that thing. We're the same size. So I let her put on one of my high heels, and I put on one of her flat shoes. And she started walking around. She walked right up to Marvin Gaye. She said, Daddy, look. It was his daughter, Nona. That's how God works. And so he said, baby. Because she'd asked me my name and everything. He said, baby, whose shoe you got on? She pointed right to me, and she said, Daddy, her name is Sydney. She's really nice. We wear the same size shoes. Can she come with us? And Marvin looked at me, and I'm waiting to meet him, and his daughter's introducing us, right? And he said, sure, baby, anything you want. And he reaches and he goes, Sydney, my name is Marvin. Girl, and I was like, I couldn't even talk, and I'm like salivating at the mouth, man.
Okay.
And that's how it started. I was like a volunteer babysitter for him, and I didn't know he was preparing to go on tour, but I was always singing. And his secretary, Kitty Sears, Kitty heard me singing, and one night after I got off working at Target, I was going to come home, and somehow I supernaturally ended up pulling into the Ambassador Hotel parking lot where he was staying at the time and knocking on the door, questioning my actions the whole time because I don't drop in on people. And then when I got there, Kitty is the one that told me, she said, Sydney, she said, I'm so glad you're here. She said, tonight is the last night for auditions for background singers. She says, and I know you can sing. And then she stopped and she told Marvin, she said, Marvin, did you know that Sydney can sing? And he stopped, and he looked at me like, why did you say something, kind of looked. And he said, baby, you know how to sing? I said, yes, sir. He said, hold on. And he got on the phone, and he called Harvey Fuqua, who was doing the audition. And he's looking at me, and he's saying, now, Harvey, I'm sending over a young lady, and if she really can sing, and if she can blend and harmonize with the other singers, then I want to hire her because she's good people.
Mm-hmm.
And it changed my life, you know, so.
Wow.
Yeah, so God did it through a child, got me in the door.
Okay,
you know, so
won't he do it? He will do it. He will do it. Yeah. He will make a way somehow, won't he? So Marvin Gaye, first of all, Marvin was so fine. And
oh
you
my
know,
God.
I know you, so I know it was all you could do to just, you probably, the whole experience was probably surreal for you, right?
It really was. That's the best word. It was surreal. You feel like you're living in a dream. And he really, it was just the finest and the actual sexiest man I've ever known in my life. Just somebody who oozed with that kind of poise, like he knew how to say the right thing, put the right butter in his voice to make any woman melt. And he knew, he was a master at it. He knew what he was doing, too. I was like, oh, my goodness.
So now, what was the audition like? How did that go?
You know, it went very well. There were just a handful of singers left, and he wanted four singers. Because the video of Sexual Healing had four female models in there. And somebody, I think it might have been Harvey Fuqua, suggested he had female singers. Because in times past, he would have probably had male singers. So this was a first in a long time, you know, that he'd used all female. And so he wanted kind of a fresh sound. And so Paulette McWilliams, who used to sing with Rufus before
with
Chaka.
Luther, right.
Yes, and she was with Luther for many years. Paulette was already hired as one of the singers, and she was the one who did, like, the duets with him, the tribute to, like, Tammy Terrell and you know, the duets that he did.
Right.
And so she was already working with him, so she was also kind of aiding with the auditions, as far as, especially in the area of blends. And I really, at the time, Patrice, I didn't know much about blend. I knew how to harmonize. But Paulette was the one who could hear in my voice the potential that I had, you know, to blend. And so Lynn Davis, who had all had worked with George Duke, she was
everybody.
One that, yeah, you know, and so she was auditioning. We were auditioning together, and another young lady who kind of like me was kind of green and they kind of new to it all, a young lady named Frida Woody. And I think that we were, the four of us were chosen because of the blend. And like I said, uh-huh. It was a whole new concept for me because in church choir, we were just always singing out just to hear, you know, the parts. And I think our voices naturally blended. And once we got on the road, it really was, I credit Lynn Davis to helping me understand the concept of it and the science of it, how you have to kind of change your voice a bit to blend with others. And I didn't know anything about that, but I appreciate, you know, singers who, you know, share the
help
knowledge.
One another. That's
working.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right.
You know,
because
somebody
it can
else
be
could
so,
have sat on them. Mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah, it can be so competitive. And there's an art to blending because what you're supposed to be doing is trying to sound like one voice.
Like one thing.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, in the background. You're not supposed to be sticking out. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You are in the background trying to sound like one voice. So that's
one.
Very important. So now we have some callers waiting on the line. Callers, I want you to know that I see you there. But before we get to the callers, we're going to, since we're talking about Marvin. Now, how long did you tour with Marvin?
No, I did his very last tour before he died, which was in the spring through the summer, going into early fall of 1983. So that was
okay.
his last tour before he died, and it was my first. So very special year.
So what was that like being on tour with Marvin Gaye? I mean, you know, was it top shelf as far as, because, you know, we've been on many tours, both of us, before, and some are on a scale from 1 to 10, some can be 2, some can be 10. So, you know, I've always heard that Marvin has always had, like, huge entourages and things. So what was it like being on tour with him?
You know what it was? It was like one big, amazing family. And what he did do, we had a big orchestra. I mean, several horns and a full rhythm section, like 3 keyboards, 3 guitars. You know, so it was a big, big band. Sheila E. and her brother and her cousin, they were doing percussion. It was a big band, Elmira Collins, you know. So we doubled up. Paulette McWilliams and I were roommates, and you know, so it worked out. There were 6 women, so Paulette and I roomed together, and Lynn and Frida roomed together, and Sheila E. and Elmira roomed together, and then all the guys in the band doubled up. So it was that kind of thing. So like everybody didn't have their own room. So you know, but for me being my first time out, it was I had so much fun, and then you know, you learn how to not only blend on with the singers, but how to blend your life with somebody else when you're on the road like that and you're rooming
right.
with somebody.
Right.
But for me, it was
rooming
amazing.
With somebody. Yeah, rooming with somebody is definitely an adjustment. It's cool if y'all get along. That's
it's
a gold
when
star
you're young
right there.
Too. Boy, no, I love you too much. I don't want to room with you. You know, but when being young and my first time out, it was all good to me. I was just glad, you know, to be in at the party. But it was since it was my first tour, it's probably the most exciting, and just Marvin every night coming out on that stage The sensation, the feeling, when I just recall it in my mind, and the sound, just, oh, all these amazing musicians and singers, and then hearing that voice, oh, my God. It's just, there really was nothing like it. So nothing and no one really stands on that level as far as what I felt it in every fiber of my being, you know. Nobody's ever hit it out of the ballpark like that. Marvin did that. And
how did he treat his personnel?
You know, as far as he treated us fine. He rode the bus with us sometimes. Sometimes we'd be at a truck stop. Marvin would be out there playing touch football and stuff. And just, you know, he really was.
So he was down to earth. He was down to earth.
He was down to earth. Oh, yeah. He was very down to earth. Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. Well, that's good news. I'm always glad to hear that, you know what I'm saying, because one thing about you, I know you'll tell it like it is. And so, you know, so many of us who are thrust out in front, you know, and become the quote-unquote star, you know, ego gets involved and turns us into another whole person, you know. So knowing that, you know, as famous and celebrated as he was, he was still down to earth before all things. And so, plus he's a preacher's son, so I know that had a lot to do with it. So, okay, callers, all you callers, hold on. We're getting ready now to listen to what's going on. Marvin Gaye. Y'all ready? Bam.
Hey, what's up now?
Brother, what's up?
Hey,
this is a
big party, man.
Mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate.
You know we've got to find a way
to bring some love and tears here today. Oh, picket lines and picket signs. Punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see.
Right on.
right.
Hey.
That's one of my favorites, too. What's going on, baby?
Man,
okay,
yeah.
So now, let's see. If some of these callers are still on the line, we're going to go for area code 617. Let's try them first. Area code 617, are you there? You know they get shy when you call them out. Okay. I'm going to try another one. 323-401. You there, caller?
I am here.
Yay.
Yeah.
So who are we speaking to?
This is Deanie McDonald from Los Angeles, California, and I am Cindy Wayne Davis's biggest fan.
All right. All right. Very good. Well, thank you so much for calling. So what do you have to say?
Well, I've known Sydney for many, many years, but I've learned things about her tonight that I never knew, and it is just absolutely delightful. She is truly God's gift to the earth for us, for music, for drama, so many things. But my request is, could we hear from Sydney tonight just a few bars of something that she could sing to us?
Okay, well, I'm sure she will have no problem with that. So we'll make sure that we make that happen before the interview is over. And
yes.
If you think you've heard a lot, you have not heard anything yet. We've only just begun.
Outstanding. Well, I am listening in and enjoying it. Thank you so much.
Cindy, do you have anything, any reply to your biggest fan?
This is my biggest fan. This is my dear, dear friend, and she is Pastor Steenie McDonald, a wonderful woman of God and a dance minister. And Steenie, I want to say thank you because as a woman of God, you have inspired me and you have lifted me in this journey. And you're one of those people that keeps me encouraged to stay in the game and make the next step and make the next step. And so I thank you for that, for your encouragement.
Well, it's absolutely, you know, without question, you know, Sydney, it's an honor and a joy. And I think that we have people in our lives that cheerlead us, you know, cheer us on. But then there are other people that champion us. And for you, Sydney, I'm just going to keep championing you to go on, to keep going on and on and on. Love you so much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, my sister. Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you. Well, that was a good phone call. That was so good. I think I'll try another one. Sid, you up to it?
Yes,
okay,
let me see
if they're still there. Area code 213-712.
That'd be me. Hey, y'all. It's Marcelina.
Oh, what's going on, Marcelina?
Hey, Chocolate. Hey, Sydney. How you doing?
Oh,
this is
our girl.
It's my girl, Marcelina.
I'm just following in y'all footsteps. I want to be just like y'all when I grow up, okay?
Hey, Sid, she's going to be out. It's her turn next. But so, Marcelina, do you have any questions or comments for our dear sister Sid?
Well, you know, me and Sydney sang back up with Marilyn and Billy together. So, you know, that was one thing we did, and it was, like, totally awesome. And then I left, and she's still going. So, hey, I ain't mad at you. And we gotta go have breakfast at Denny's again, okay?
I know, I love that, Denny's. But you know what, Patrice, when I first met Marcelina, I was on tour with Joe Cocker, and she was on tour with Tom Jones.
Right.
And
oh, my God, yes.
Who was Marcelina on tour with?
Marcelina was on tour with Tom Jones.
Okay, got it.
And I was on tour with Joe Cocker. And the other singer that I was on tour with Joe, her name is Maxine Sharp. She knew Marcelina, and somehow we all hooked up, and she was so excited. She said, my friend Marcelina, she's in town with you know, with Tom Jones, if she's going to come. And we met, I think we had drinks and talk.
We did, girl. We was at the bar.
I fell in love with her when I first met her. And then hearing, like, you know, this 20 feet from stardom, like hearing Marcelina's story. And then at the time, Marcelina, that's when you were about to adopt Porcelain. And it totally changed my world. And I thought, wow. And then it was later that we got back in touch. I think just living both in L.A. But we met on the road. And
yeah,
it was a wonderful little gathering of backup singers. But what I saw at the table, Patrice, all I saw were stars, honey. And I think we all recognized each other's light. And that's how I remember Marcelina. And then we continued on to have a history together. And we're still
good
together.
Oh,
that's
my gosh,
right.
That's right, Joe Cocker.
All of us.
We came to see you guys at, I remember you guys were singing, and we were sitting there and having drinks and stuff, and yeah it was like, you know, it was just like, yeah, we were it. You couldn't say anything to us, because we were the it girl.
We were,
this is 20-some years later, right?
And you know what, and that's absolutely, this is absolutely why I'm doing what I'm doing, because like I said in the beginning, you know, those who emit the glow that allows the so-called stars to shine, you know, there are so many, the supporting cast is enormous. And so it is my job, it is my duty and my obligation for everybody who listens to Everybody Is a Star. They know they're going to learn something. So I was very inspired by 20 Feet from Stardom because, you know, as far as I'm concerned, they scratched the surface. And I'm like, wait, Hold on. Okay, this is what they going to do?
Girl, you should have been up in there. All y'all should have been up in there. I mean, but hey, I get it.
I said, well, I'm going to pick up, I'm gonna pick up where they left off, okay? Because
and
I
God
know the Divas, okay?
Right.
So, Marcelina,
and you're number
her
one. And you are sitting on top of the score for being a diva, okay? So
yes, you are, honey. I love
Don't
Patrice.
Make me blush, y'all. Don't make me blush now. Please
the first
don't
thing
do
I
that.
Did with Patrice, when I realized this is the lead singer from Rats at the Stage, I was like, oh, my. I was already a fan of yours. And you were so down to earth and cool.
Right.
We all love you.
Yeah.
But we all need to get together.
I got to
We all need to get together. Huh? What'd you say?
Yeah. Can I tell a quick story about Marcelina?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh,
Marcelina. No, I got to tell this, Marcelina. Marcelina, I'm going to tell you her heart. Marcelina literally saved my life on the road. I was, we did a gig. It was New Year's Eve gig
New
up
Year's
in
Eve.
San
Francisco. Yeah.
And on the plane, something triggered an asthma attack. And you know how when you're entertained, you still want it to be cool and think, I'm going to do this gig. Marcelina came to my room. She checked on me. She was like, no, we're going to, took me to the hospital, stayed with me, just, you know, literally, it literally saved my life because I was trying to pull up. Marcelina was like, oh, no. But I thank God for that. And that's the part of being on the road is all about, because when you're on the road and you're doing all this, you're trying to do your gig, but you got to take care of yourself. Yeah. And it's beautiful when people around you are aware and saying, hey, girl, no, wait a minute. This, you know, this needs attention. And, you know, we pull up through anything to do our gigs, but when your life is on the line, I was so glad God sent this sister to me because Marcelina didn't let up. And I wasn't able to do the gig, but I'm alive to talk about it. So.
Yeah. Praise the Lord for that, girl.
I heard that.
That's right, because it was like,
no,
you got to go to the hospital. Yeah, it ain't that serious.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right, I hear you. And you're right about Marcelina. She does not play. And it's all about sisterhood. It's all about sisterhood. That's what it's about.
Yeah.
Not competition.
That's it.
Not
no
hatred. Not none of that. Mm-hmm. Sisterhood, okay? Mm-hmm. So, Marcelina, we love you. And, you know, we're going to come to next.
This is just wonderful. God bless you. And I just think it's awesome. So I'm going to let y'all go because, you know, we could stand on the line all night.
I'm going to call in when you're on the line.
You can call in when she's on her show. Okay.
Yep.
Thank you.
All right.
Love you, Marcelina.
Love
all right.
I love y'all too. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. So we have a couple of more callers. I think, Sid, we have a, I'm being told we have an international caller. So let's who that. Let's see who that person is, and then we're going to...
Who's that? I'm all excited now. Who is this?
Me too. Who is this? So, hello?
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 Hi. Can you hear me?
Sure can. Who's calling?
Oh, hi. My name is Ross. How are you?
Good. Where are you calling from, Ross?
I'm actually calling from Los Angeles.
Oh, okay. Very good. So,
that international would keep me off when you said international. I said, wait a minute. Who is that, me?
Hey, I'm just going by what the computer is saying. But anyway, what's your comment, Ross?
I just wanted to say hello to Sydney. She was my teacher. I found her in Music Connection all the way back in the early 90s. Because I was thumbing through a book, and I saw where she had, I saw the name because I was a young kid, but I had became a huge fan of Diana Ross.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw her name in the book as a teacher, and I said, well, she worked with Diana Ross, so I got to go work with her. And I signed up. I signed up, and I went to her classes.
Yes.
And you remember me, Sydney?
Yes, and we're Facebook friends, too.
Yes, we are.
Yes. You took me back. Yes, and thank you for calling in. How you doing now? You're doing film, right?
I'm doing film, yes, and we must work together real soon.
Well, then you're going to have to shoot my movie.
Hey, that would be perfect. That would be a wonderful. Yeah. I'm trying to reach those Tyler
Perry.
Let
me ask you this. What did you learn from me? Because it was so long ago. And I know I probably quizzed you on what did you learn from me as a teacher?
I mean, I learned a lot. Well, one thing I learned is I can't sing. That's the one thing I learned. Because I was tone deaf. I thought I could do it. But, you know, once I went to class and once I actually heard R. Kelly sing, I realized that was just one of the wish lists that I wasn't going to pull off. I said I'll just stick to acting and filmmaking and writing, which is my first love, so anyway.
But we had some fun.
Well, you know what? Everything happens for a reason. So whatever that reason was, if nothing else, you ran across one of the most prolific vocal coaches here in Los Angeles, and I'm sure that you did learn something, tone deaf or not. I'm sure that you did learn something.
No, I learned a lot. I mean, everything that you taught, everything was a great lesson. But, you know, that's the point when you realize whether it's something that you want to do. And it was just too frustrating for me to try to understand what not being tone deaf was. So, you know, it was a learning. You taught me that wasn't a career for me.
Well, that's a good lesson.
All right. And you know what? That's a good
thing. You found your path. That's a good thing.
Yeah, it is a good thing. I'm serious.
Because that saves
a whole lot of time. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, it does. I was going to all these other coaches, and they were edging me on and stuff, and I'd go to record these demo tracks, and nobody said anything. But once I got there, that's when I really knew that, you know, either it is or it isn't here. And this is where I found out. So after that, it was like, okay, that's it. So, no, that was a good thing. It was a great thing.
Right, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for calling
in, my friend.
Thank you, and I'll be talking to you soon.
All right,
just wanted to give you a little love tonight.
Thank you so much, baby. We're gonna hook up soon. Act off for yourself.
Okay. All right. See you later.
Bye, baby.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye. Okay, Sid. So now we're gonna get past Marvin Gaye. So now you also did studio recordings and worked for such artists as Ray Charles, Barry White, Joe Cocker. Now, the time is flying, so tell me a little bit about your experience with Ray Charles.
Kind of ride through it with Ray Charles. I actually was filling in for our friend Wendy Smith, who was a Raylette, and Wendy, I think, had just had her baby, Ariana, who just graduated college, and she had to be with her child, so She recommended me, and she told Mr. Charles, she said, you know, my friend Sydney can do this job. She can blend. She can harmonize. And she used to work with Marvin Gaye. And by her telling him that, I didn't have to audition. I just came in, and Wendy had given me a tape so I could really learn my part. And she told me, she said, Mr. Charles, don't play. And so I learned my part, and I learned everybody's part. And so when my first rehearsal,
you learned everybody's part.
I learned everybody's part. And so when I got there, he quizzed me first. He said, "Oh, we got a new girl. Let's see if she knows her part." And Patrice, in front of everybody, he quizzed me on these five songs. He started playing and make me sing by myself, and I nailed it. And at the end of it, he said, "Oh, that new girl knows her part." And so that made me feel good about myself that I could do that. And then so I toured live with him. And then Barry White, somebody said,
Wait. What was it like? What was it like doing a great job?
You know, when we were on stage with him, it was magical because you can't learn this in college, what this guy does. He was a pure genius. Now, the road with Ray Charles was a little rough because the pay was very, very low.
Right.
And
right.
We had to pay for our own hotel rooms. And
right.
So that was kind of, and we all, yeah, we shared rooms and all that. So it was kind of rough with that because then I felt after having worked with Marvin in the road experience of it, you feel like, well, now I feel like I didn't step back a bit. I feel like, does he know what year it is? It felt a little like Chitlin Circuit. I ain't lying. The bigger picture, and I thought, but the opportunity to work with Ray Charles and what I'm learning, what I'm gleaning from it, shoot, there's no college course that offers the course that, and there's no amount of money that could, you know, so I had to look at it like that. Like, yeah, you know, that road experience, we weren't as cushy as some of these other tours were going, but we were in the midst of a genius.
Okay. I hear you. I know exactly what you're talking about. And you know what? And I appreciate you being forthcoming about the truth because, you know, that's what I'm bringing to everybody at the start. I want people to know the truth, you know.
That's
I don't want everybody you work with, oh, they were wonderful, oh, it was wonderful, oh, everything was wonderful. No, it is not always like that. People are not always wonderful. These people have their own personalities, their own tricks. Ray Charles was known for being cheap. He was known for being cheap. He was known for not paying people. He was known for people, you know, his people had to pay for their own hotel rooms and stuff. Paula, you know, Michelle, you know, our girl Paula, she'll tell you all about that. So, you know, it just was what it was. But like you said, it's an experience that that's priceless. You know what I'm saying? Something that you will always remember.
And I think that part of this business, because we're always going to go through things like that where it's not on the same level that you would desire, but I think for me, my father taught me, you know, always look at that bigger picture, you know, and what can you be grateful for. And I think, you know, I was like, yeah, but what would I pay to have this experience of working with Ray Charles? If there was some kind of fee, I would probably work the whole summer to raise up, you know what I'm saying? So the other part, like, okay, I get over it. You know, you go in some of these rooms, just, you know how it is, have our lights on.
Thank you. We're not even going to get into that one right there. But, yes, you got to stay prepared. Must be prepared. Okay, so we're going to move on to, you know, I teach those lessons. I'm how to be prepared on the road, Queen 101. You know that, right?
Yes.
So let's move on.
I'm one of your kids. I raised my hand.
Okay.
Clean.
That's right, baby. So let's move on to Barry White. Tell us about Barry.
Oh, now he was like Big Papa Bear, you know, such a strong black man. Loved Barry. And when I started working with him, and again, it was that name Marvin Gaye. Somebody had told me that he was looking, and somebody sent me to somebody. And so I think my initial audition was with his MD, his musical director, and one of the musicians. And so when they saw Marvin Gaye, they just said, okay, well, we just go, like, it was done deal. And then, like, we don't need to look any further. So I'm always so grateful for that man. And when I started working with Barry White, I found out that he and Marvin were very close friends. And I grew very close to his wife, Glodine, because she was teaching us the songs and sang with us on some of the gigs. And I had an amazing blend with her because I was always singing to those Love Unlimited records, and they had those nice low harmonies. So it was just a dream singing with him because I love those songs. And one time, Barry, I did a backup session for an album, and I got there an hour early, and he was so impressed. He just gave me like 45 minutes of his time just to talk and ask questions. And, it was such a wonderful moment. But when he started talking about Marvin, you know, he said how much he loved Marvin like a brother, and that a few weeks before he died, he met with him, and they were going to record an album together. And I thought, what would that have, my God, that would have overpopulated the world. It would have been too damn sexy, you know.
Okay.
The two of them together. But he really was, Barry was such a family man. And he had his own label for a while. And after I toured with him for at least a couple of years, he invited me to join his label. He was going to put together a reprise of the Love Unlimited with four singers. It was going to be me and his daughter Bridget and his wife Glodine and her sister. And so I was all excited. It didn't get off the ground, and you know, but we remained close with him. But the whole time that I was on tour, I learned a lot from him. He was just a great guy, strong man.
So how long did you were you on the road with him?
I think it was about 4 years.
Wow, that was a good run.
Yeah. And then you know how it is. Within those periods of time, you're on tour, and then there's this lull of dark space, and then maybe he's recording an album, and you know, and then another tour. So over the 4 years, we did different tours, and I did some recordings with him during that time period.
Mhm. Wow, that experience from 1 to 10. What would you? As far as whole picture, was that a good experience?
Everything was good, but again, the pay was low, so I'm gonna give it a 7.
Okay. All right. That's what I'm talking about.
Gotta keep it real. Everything else was amazing, and he was amazing. But you know, it's like. It was weak, you know, the pay was low. That's all I'm going to say.
I hear you.
It could be a little bit more.
So now, wait a minute. Here we go over to Joe Cocker.
So tell
me how that happened.
Now, it was interesting. I had done a backup session for a singer. And, man, I worked my butt off and got paid a very low amount. And I just thought, okay, I'm not going to walk away with this experience feeling anything because she's a good person. So what I did, I took the money that she paid me, and I sowed it into church. And I gave it over to the Lord, Patrice. I really did. And I just said, God bless her. And God bless me. And I just thought, you know, next time I'll make wiser decisions. You know, you got to honor your time and your space. But, you know, it was one of those learning experiences. Like, I'm doing all this work. And when she put that little bit of change in my hands, I was like, what?
Mm-hmm.
But I sowed the seed. And then I would say maybe a good month and a half later, I get a call from a guy who was the music director for Joe Cocker, and this same chick, I won't say her name, she was the one that had recommended me.
Okay.
And so he sent me to Maxine Sharp's house to audition. Maxine liked me right away. She liked my blend. She called, and she told the manager, she said, tell Joe we found our singer. So it really went like that. And again, Maxine, it was just two of us singing background. And Joe had allowed her, she had been worked with him so long, had allowed her to get somebody that she blended well with and liked, and that he trusted her opinion. And so that's how I got the gig. But, you know, it was just something, when I think about it, you know, that other situation, I could have taken it a whole different way, but made a choice to sow a seed and just to learn from it and to wish the sister well.
Right.
And this
and
is
see,
the sister
and
turned
and
around.
There you go. Turned
yeah.
it around. So she now,
sure
now had were you familiar with Joe Cocker before you got this gig?
Just a little bit. You know, it was a big learning curve when I started working with him, but I knew, like, the You Are So Beautiful, I'd heard that, and what was the one from the movie, Love Lift Us Up, We Belong, I'd heard that,
right.
And it, you know, so there was just a handful of Joe Cocker songs that I personally was aware of.
Familiar with,
when I started
okay.
working with him, I had to learn that.
So let me ask you this, though. Here's what I want to know. So you
yeah.
had never seen him live. You were just kind of familiar with his songs a little
yes,
bit.
Yes, and I
okay.
think maybe I had seen a couple of clips of him. And then, you know, I was familiar with the John Belushi's imitation of Joe Cocker.
Because that's what
remember,
I'm getting
remember,
to. This is what yeah. I'm getting to.
Right,
when you,
right.
When you finally, okay, you had seen a couple of clips of him. Okay,
mm-hmm.
so now you're finally on stage with him. Because when I first saw Joe Cocker, I was saying to myself, okay, when is he going to quit playing? He's playing. I know he's playing. You know what I'm saying. He is not serious. When is he going to stop? But he never did stop. That was the way he really was. So when you were actually on stage and working with him, like, did you, like, have to, because me, if it had been me, I would have had, I couldn't look at Joe. I would have just had to just kind of, like, concentrate on my background vocals and not look at Joe so I could just get through the gig. You know what I'm saying? So, did that affect you in any kind of way, or you just was like, okay, this is just what it is? And
you know, I found it, I think what I keyed in on during our rehearsals with Joe is that, because I'm the type of person, I will be paying attention, I'll be watching, I'm looking, trying to see what's going on, and
right.
I really was very observant with him, I realized something as I watched him, the way his body reacts to movement. Now, in our culture, African-American culture, we hear the music, our bodies move naturally, and we go into a kind of a dance and a rhythm. And
right.
Joe, I think, was feeling that kind of electricity in his body. But this is just my opinion. But I think he feels it, but he just really can't dance. So all
uh-huh.
of that strange kind of movement, a lot of people thought he had some kind of muscular, you know, disease, but he doesn't. I think that's just when he hears the music, he feels it, but it gets all locked up in his body.
So that's the way Joe was just feeling it. That's how. That's the way
exactly.
Joe felt it.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
And it was it's such a trip because, you know, to look at him, he was looking one way, but his voice. Well, you know,
yes.
I actually like Joe Cocker. I liked
yes.
him. I said, okay, he can sing. So to see this voice coming out of this person, it was definitely a conundrum. But, you know, it takes all kinds. You know what I'm saying? So with that, we're going to go. Now, I know that must have been, let me say this first before we play this song. I know that must have been a real sweet gig right there. I'll be surprised if it
was. It was a great gig. It was the 10 as far as in the 1 to 10 because
right.
everything that you want is like top of the line. You know, the pay
right.
was top of the line. All of our accommodations were top of the line, our travel. It was just, you know, that really was a sweet gig. It was like kind of, you know, seeing how the other half lives. And I'm doing it as a backup singer, so, you know, there were people. And the musicians, you know, they always, the pot was a little sweeter for them. But, honey, I was glad to be at that party. And I kind of missed that
I
party.
I heard. And, you know, that's one thing that I never quite understood was why musicians get paid or got paid, I don't know what they're doing now, but would get paid more money than the backup singers. I never quite got that because, you know what I'm saying, as far as I was concerned, if everybody can't make an equal amount of money, I always thought that the singers should make more money than the musicians. That's how I always felt. But, that's another show probably. So here's what we're going to do. Yeah, that's another show.
Because as I'm thinking of it, most
of the musicians were men, okay? So that probably has a lot to do with it. So we're going to...
That's another conversation,
but it's
the real
right.
world.
And
people in film know that real world. You know, there's different pay scales, you know. So that's another reality in our business, too.
Okay. So we're going to listen to Joe Cocker singing about getting by with a little help from his friends.
Oh,
go,
yeah.
Joe.
Okay, cool. All right. Yeah.
Try not to sing out of key. Yeah. Oh, baby, how do you know? All I need is my body. I say I'm gonna get high.
Just hear you singing those parts now, Sydney. What part were you singing? Were you on top or were you in the middle?
I think soprano.
Oh, you sing soprano?
Yeah.
Okay, I can hear you on that one. Mm-hmm. Okay, so now we have a couple more phone calls. All right. Did I say 617? I can't remember. Area code 617. Are you still there? I can't remember. It's been a minute.
I think that was the first we tried.
Okay. Area code 925. 925, are you there?
I'm there. I'm here.
Yay. So who are we speaking to?
I'm an ardent fan of Sidney Wayne Davis.
Okay. What is your name, ardent fan?
I am calling from the San Francisco Bay Area. My name is George Livingston, and I happened to be browsing the Facebook, and I didn't know what I was calling, and I'm really enjoying this.
Sydney, do you know Sydney?
I've been a fan of hers. I met her at the American Music Awards about a long time ago. What had happened, I'm an entertainment photographer, and I had just walked Michael Jackson and Liz Taylor to their car taking pictures, and I'm all pumped up. It was my first time going to the American Music Awards, and then here comes Smokey Robinson. I'm taking pictures. Then I say, oh, there's Janet Jackson. I'm taking a picture. I said, that's that, Janet Jackson. And she says, no, my name is Sidney Davis.
Okay. All right.
We've been dear friends ever since, as well as I'm an ardent fan as well.
All right. Well, Sidney, what do you have to say to your ardent fan?
That is George Livingston. And, you know, I want to say thank you, George. But, you know, Patrice, I'll tell you who George represents in my life. You know, I've got 30-plus years in this business, and there are just times when sometimes you just want to be reminded of who you are and the quality of work that you do have as an artist. And God put George in my life. Somehow George would always supernaturally call me, send me a little note, something to remind me of who I am. And one time, I was going through it. It might have been after I lost that Joe Cocker gig, but I don't know. I mean, I was going through a rough little time period years ago.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I went to the mailbox, and it was a letter, and it was from George. And I remember he had drawn a star at the top, and he just said, and he put my name, like made it like it was in life, and he said, Sydney is a star. And I needed to be reminded that, you know, because sometimes you hear things and go through things in this business, and there are forces around you wanting to make you doubt the light of God that's in you. And so oftentimes God sends these wonderful angels in our life, and George is one of mine, to remind you that, no, what is in you is real, and only God can, you know, make people respond that way. So, you know, George is always just a reminder that God put something special in me. George, I thank you for that.
Well, I'm just going to wrap it up, but I just wanted to think about Sidney and I. We are in like with each other. She's been very supportive of my family. And matter of fact, when she was touring, I think, with Joe Cocker, I was at the time, I had just completed touring with a guy by the name of MC Hammer about 20-some-odd years ago, and had just came back from Europe. And the same production company that was behind our production was with the Joe Cockers when she was over in Europe. And some kind of way she made a connection within a reference of me. And she called me and she said, you know, we had the same production company, and here this is something of a company like six some odd thousand miles away. And they made a reference to my activity there. But Sydney and I guarantee you, you have not seen the best that's on its way. And she's just the spark in the diamond in the rough, as you're saying. But I'm going to let you go. But Sydney, I didn't even know what I was calling. I just saw the Facebook. I didn't know anything about the radio show. But the best to you, and I just feel really endeared to know that I have a friend and a confidant with Sydney Wayne Davis.
I heard that. And listen, let me say this. Now that you know about Everybody is a Star, with yours truly, Patrice Chocolate Banks, as the host, I hope we come on every Friday night. I hope you will continue to tune in if you don't have anything else to do on a Friday night, okay?
Well, I tell you like this. Even if I have something else to do, I'm going to tune in. And I'm gonna spread the word to those that are friends, as well as those that are in this industry, because communication is king, and we just got to keep that flow going. And again, I didn't know what I was listening to, and as I am listening, I'm definitely enjoying it. And I'm going to let the other callers call in, but the best to both of you. And Sydney, you know what to do. And like I always tell her, I said, when she get those awards, make sure she just say hello to George.
All right. I heard that. Thank you, George.
And you take care now. Okay, bye-bye.
Okay. All right. Okay, so we got to move this along, girl, because believe it or not, we have not even we got a whole bunch of stuff to touch on. Just let me say that, you've also worked with Don, or been in the studio with Donna Summer, Stevie Wonder, Bette Midler, Coolio, and many others. Okay, let me throw that in. I have to throw all that in. Okay, so now you moved on from, well, first of all, I want to say how you and I met. You and I met during a period of my career and your career where, at the time, gigs called casuals were very, very, very lucrative and popular, and you could make some pretty good side money. And casuals were gigs where you would do corporate gigs or, bar mitzvahs, bat mitzvahs, Jewish weddings, all that. And they would happen on the weekend. And so one weekend I was doing this wedding out in Malibu somewhere. And through a talent agent out of Beverly Hills, and Sydney showed up, and so she had just finished doing a casual show, so she was coming to just hang out because another friend of hers, I think it was Wendy, who you already mentioned, was on the gig also. So Sydney was just coming to hang out after her gig, and we met, and she found out who I was, and she was like, but before she knew who I was, she was like, she was just hanging out, so she heard me singing. She came up to me, and that's what I always appreciate about you, Sydney, was the fact you came up to me and you said, girl, you were so forthcoming. You said, girl, you can sing and blah, 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 and then I'm going to turn you on. Let me give you some more numbers. And then when you found out that I had been with Grand Central Station, it was like, that was just like it then. So we've been Siamese. We've been connected at the hip throughout the years, ever since then. But my most memorable time with you was when I had this gig with a more or less of a celebrity from Israel called Moisha Noy, N-O-Y. And I used to work with them all the time on weekends, big corporate gigs. These big gigs. So he had one of his friends was getting married in Israel, and so he called me for the gig, and he said, do you know, he left it up to me who I would choose to come with me to do this gig in Israel. So because Sydney and I were kindred spirits as far as spiritually is concerned, you were the first one to pop up in my mind. It's like, well, I can't think of anybody else who would appreciate going to Israel than Sydney. So we went over to Israel, baby, and we went to Jerusalem, and we went. We took that walk, and we stood on the ground that Jesus stood on, and we walked through all seven stations. These are for Christians, okay? This story is for Christians, because if you ain't a Christian, you don't know what I'm talking about. But, baby, that was a fit. We rode on camels. We we did everything there. We got the most we could get out of Israel for that. I think we were over there for about a week, about five days. Just to do one gig, a wedding, just to do a wedding. Yeah. But, the fact that we were able to share such a holy, spiritual experience, I will never forget that, ever.
Yeah.
And Sydney was right there with me, and we were sharing that together. So,
we were singing some gospel song, like, out just in the open. I remember that. And people were walking by and just being blessed. I can't remember what song we were singing, but we were singing in harmony, just out in the open.
Right. We were walking from the hotel to the hotel where the function was to the hotel where we were staying, which was only about a half a block away. And during that walk, we had to go through a tunnel. So the acoustics made us just start singing. We just started singing. We was in the middle of Israel singing Cindy, we were singing some Negro spiritual.
I can't remember what it was. I can't remember what it was either.
People were stopping. They were driving past us, stopping, listening, wondering what in the heck was going on. These two black women, walking down the street in the tunnel, just singing to the top of our voices because it sounds so beautiful.
I think we were both so happy to be there, and it was like a spirit of praise just came over us, and we just started singing.
Okay.
And for me, girl, I was so, not only was I glad that you asked me, thank you so much, but I had prayed about that, and I remember when I was with Joe Cocker, we went to Israel, but we never got a chance to really see it and see the places, so I was kind of mad. We were only there like 2 days and did a gig and was gone, and I was so mad that it was such a short trip, that part of the tour. And I prayed, and at first I was going to try to go with like one of these like Benny Hinn or, one of these people on TV. And then I said, no, I don't want to pay no money. Girl, I was spoiled. I want to go to Israel. I said, but I don't want to pay my own way. I said, I want somebody else to pay the way. And then I said, and Lord, I said, I don't want to be just 2 days. I said, I want to be there at least a week. And I said, and I want to be able to see all my Jesus sites. I want to see the Mount Olives. I want to see, I start naming it. And then I said, and while I'm there, Lord, I at least want to do one or two gigs. I said, I want to get paid while I'm there. And I let alone. And about 3 months later, you called me. And
so
everything
you put your order in.
You put your order in, baby.
And then you'll do it.
Everything I prayed for was everything you would ask me. God put me on your heart with that one.
That's right. And I have pictures that I cherish to this day of that whole experience. Okay. We're going to move in, because not only are you a singer, but you are a songwriter. And your music can be heard in movie scores such as Heaven is a Playground, which features Too Good. And Black Magic Woman, which features Listening for Your Love, which you co-wrote with Lloyd Talbert. And you and Lloyd also wrote a song for Diana Ross called You're Gonna Love It.
Love It, yeah.
And you are also, we're going to play that at the end of the show as we go out. We're going to play that one. And we're also going to play Well, we might play that one before. You don't have to be a star. I think I'm going to have to play that one before. But the Diana Ross song that you wrote, now how did you get that gig? How did you manage to able to submit a song to Diana Ross?
Well, actually, Lloyd's uncle is James Carmichael, who produced, well, he produced Diana's, but there's the name of a group, and I can't think of them right now, but... anyway, he was a producer with Motown, and he was producing Diana's album. Now he was also producing a lot of new artists. And so one of our songs that was on a demo, we had a demo of like three songs, and You're Gonna Love It was on that demo. And Lloyd had submitted it, and then his uncle had used one of the songs for this young group that he had. Now, I had told Lloyd that You're Gonna Love It. I didn't want that being submitted to anybody because I was like, hey, that's my song, you know, and every artist needs a song, that's my, and I said, no, and then he kept telling me, he said, well, my uncle said there's this group. I said, no, every new artist, that's my song, and well, we would have it. I said, now I don't want to hear anything more about somebody else singing a song unless it's somebody big. I said, like Diana Ross or something. Well, I just put it out there, and then what had happened was our demo tape was at one of the A&R people at Motown had access to, you know, all these demo tapes, and Diana was recording her record. Now, his uncle, Lloyd's uncle, wasn't trying to submit songs for us, but he was producing on the record, and Diana herself wanted something that was more up-tempo and that had a good positive message, and she wanted it about love. And so our song was on there, so it was the A&R, and I don't know her name, but the A&R person said, you know what, there's a song on here I think you might like. So that's how it was already kind of submitted, but that song, it was just kind of out of the blue that the A&R lady said, Diana, listen to this, and she liked it. So then we were contacted directly through, I think it was through her management or something. They found us, they called us, and they wanted to do that song. And so when I came home one night, and I'm listening to my message, and Lloyd left me a message, and I hear him talking about Sydney. Somebody wants to sing the song, and I'm fussing, going, I done told this man. I done told him. And then he says, I hope you're sitting down. And the whole time I'm fussing, he says, the person that wants to sing the song is Diana Ross. And, girl, I fell down in my living room. I couldn't believe
it. Girl, I know you did. I know you did.
So the song did better over in Europe. They even did a remix of it, a single. You know, the album wasn't as pushed in the United States. The whole CD is called "Force Behind the Power," and You're Gonna Love It is number 10 on that CD recording.
All right,
I'm doing all the background. And what blew me away, Patrice, was the fact that Diana Ross heard my demo, heard my voice, and then when I listened to her sing it, and it just blows my mind that she's not only singing lyrics that I wrote, but her voice is going through a melody that I, you know, that I
became. You can hear that she did. Right, you can hear that she did. She stuck pretty close to the melody of the song, and might have even done a couple of your little riffs, huh?
That kind of blows my mind because it's like, and it's such a level of respect and for a while that this was like in 90, 91, I think it came out in 91. But she was touring, and she did this song on her tour, and I was invited to see her in Irvine, and she did a big show, and she did my song, and I was screaming like a maniac, and the band was grooving it, and she had people up on stage dancing with her, and you can tell me nothing. I was like,
I heard that.
Kind of mind-blowing.
I heard that. I know it. I know it, girl. So, okay, quickly. Let me see. Now, after being on the road with everybody and their mama, writing songs for Diana Ross, recently you have gotten into, well, as far as I know, it's recently, you've started to develop your another side of your gifts, which is being an actress and writing plays and, belong to the Roby Theater Company, and you've performed in several plays, The River Niger, Anna Lucasta, Transitions, in which you won an NAACP Award for Best Ensemble Cast. And so briefly, we're running out of time, but I got to have you tell me a little bit about that.
Well, Ben Guillory and Danny Glover started the Roby Theater Company to give African-American writers and actors a place to hone their gifts. So I take acting class there, and I've been in several plays. And then most recently, Anna Lucasta, I won the 2013 NAACP Theater Award for Best Supporting Actress. And everything I learned about acting, I learned from Ben Guillory. And it's a wonderful space for us to grow our talent. And my desire to act came out of my writing. I started first writing, and when I wrote my first screenplay, I said I wanted to be good enough to play the characters I'm writing. And my most recent script has been submitted to the Roby Theaters. They're doing a Paul Robeson Festival with 20-minute plays, and my play United Front has been featured at NAACP Theater Festival, and it's about a family facing the threat of HIV and AIDS. So I want to, you know, educate and edutain our community with this piece called United Front.
Wow, that's awesome. Okay. So, girl, you are like a hurricane. I'm going to call you Hurricane Sydney. Baby, because you just sweep up everything around you and take it with you, and it's gone, because you are not playing, and I am so proud of you. So now you are on the road with and touring with Billy Davis and Marilyn McCoo, with my sister, Cynthia. The two of you, you've had that gig. You guys have done that gig for a while now. How long have you been doing that?
About 17 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's been a while. I started in 97. That's when I started with them.
Okay. So,
so
evidently that's been successful for you. I know that they don't tour and travel on a consistent basis, but for 17 mm-hmm. years on and off, I mean, you know, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. You know, like when we first started, like the show that you also did with us, the Marcelina, the It Takes Two, that was a much bigger production. There were four singers, and we were principals. You know, it's like you were singing and dancing and coming down front, and that was more like a big kind of Vegas-style show. And as the years gone by, they've kind of, you know, toned some things down and honed it. And then when they took a break just kind of doing churches and ministering, And I also was one of the first people with Billy's ministry called Soldiers for the Second Coming. And they do a praise and worship once a month. And, you know, I just recently got back to singing with them with doing that. But when they came back to, you know, doing music and doing shows, concerts, it kind of, you know, catered the show a little differently. And then they only used two backup singers. So that's when me and Cece, Cynthia Bass, started kind of working together. They called us back. And when they have shows where they have the fuller cast with the backup singers, it's a real joy. But, you know, they do a lot of their gigs with just the band, and, you know, and a couple of the guys sing backup too, so they don't always need us. So that's another reality with backup singers. When you got guys in the band that can sing, well...
Okay. Well, you know, people got to do what they got to do, but 17 years is a long time.
Yeah.
So,
and it's beautiful.
Yes, I did for a minute. Marcelina, I don't know what happened that she called me in to substitute, and it was myself and Paula.
Yeah, I remember.
And Earl
mm-hmm.
and
Adam Jackson.
Adam, there were four of us.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, that was a very interesting experience with Billy and Marilyn. I'm saying, you know, they've been out there for a long time. So it was another level, and it was something that I definitely learned. I know, you know, Billy's just as sweet as he wants to be. Marilyn is somewhat of a diva, but that's because she wants everything to be perfect. You know what I'm saying? She's trying to represent herself in a certain way. She's still beautiful, real classy, and it's a wonderful show. So, you know, if it comes through your town, go see Billy Davis and Marilyn McCool. If anybody doesn't know, they're from the 50 Mansion, in case you didn't know. Go check them out, and you'll see Sydney, and you'll see Cece, my sister, and they will be rocking the house.
And real quick, they do have a live CD that Cece and I are both on. So I think if you go to their website, MarilynMcCoolBillyDavis.com or .net, there you can get the live CD, and Cece and I are singing background on there. So,
What are you doing right now? Where can we find out information about all things Sydney?
You know, the best place to find out anything about all things Sydney would be my Facebook. So just go to Sydney, that's C-Y-D-N-E-Y Davis at Facebook to find out anything upcoming. But what's happening right now, I'm in the process of recording my first solo project. So the background singer's coming out of the background, down center stage. And the name of the project is Sydney with a C. And that's just a lot of people misspell my name with an S, but it's with a C. And that C stands for a lot. First off, it stands for Christ in my life. You know, it's also a tribute to my sister Cynthia, who was my manager and who really helped me in the early stages of my career, and it's just a remembrance and tribute of her. She's one of the C's in my life. And just the character that it takes, the charisma that it takes, and, you know, and at some point, Patrice, I want to cash in. So it's sitting
there. I heard
that,
girl.
And I ain't going to lie.
I'm
writing the songs and producing them myself. I just teamed up with a wonderful engineer named Larry Ferguson, and Larry, he got me my first recording gig with Donna Summer, and so after all these years, almost 30 years, Larry and I are working together again. So
full circle,
I'm excited about, you know. So hopefully, just keep your hands together in prayer that, you know, the door is open for me to get it done, and, you know, I'm looking for the next few months to, you know, maybe around September to have it completed.
All right, girl. You know, if you need any help, you know my number.
Yes, ma'am.
So now what I'm going to try to do right at this point is go ahead and fulfill the wish of the first caller, the pastor that called in. She wanted to know if we could hear a little bit of Sydney do something live for us right now. Yeah, so you want to go ahead on and something for that? Okay.
You know, I'm going to sing a little bit of a song that will be on my record, and it kind of ties in with our message. And the title of the song is called A Star Behind the Stars. So I'll sing a little bit of that. When I first knew I wanted to sing on stage, use my hairbrush as my microphone, rehearsed every day, put my lamp on its side to create a spotlight. And in front of my mirror, I was a star for a night. I dreamed about the day I'd be a singing star. And to make it come true, I'd have to work very hard. So I studied my craft, and I moved to L.A. And from Sunset to Hollywood, I tore up the stage. I produced my own songs in a small studio. But one by one, all the labels said no. One record exec nearly broke my heart. He said that my voice was perfect for the background part. So I am a star behind the stars. Yet I'm still shining brightly in the distance, but who can see that I am a star?
Girl, that was perfect for what I'm doing right now. That was, you wrote that for me, huh? You thought you surprised me with that one, huh?
Yeah, well,
perfect.
I thought it would tie in.
Definitely ties in. I love that. Love that. So now, I know that you are a vocal coach. We didn't touch on that. You've been a vocal coach for years to so many people who are chasing that dream. So lastly, what advice would you give to up-and-comers? Shout out. Let's start with the advice first.
Yeah, I think that for all singers, I think you need to first think of yourself as a musician. Be a vocal musician and take on the work ethic of a musician. Learn your instrument, learn your craft, and put the time into it, and do not lip sync. Give us the real deal. Get on that mic, work that mic, and use your real authentic voice.
Okay. And that's some of the best advice, you know, which is the advice that most of my guests give on the show. It's like, you know, study a craft, know what you're doing, and stay ready. So
yeah.
You got any shout-outs?
Oh, yes. I'd like to give a shout-out to my sister Mary. I love you. I want to give a shout-out to my goddaughter, Dina Ray, who's a wonderful hip-hop artist, and you know, I'm giving a shout-out to her. And I want to thank those that called in. I want to thank Marceline. I want to thank Steenie. I want to thank George. You know, I know Paula was supposed to. So I give a shout-out to my girl Paula, who started and kicked off this series. So to you, too. Mm-hmm.
Okay, very good. Well, I want to say that for all things chocolate, you can go to PatriceChocolateBanks.com. I want to thank my family, all you Funkalutionaries. I want to thank y'all, Tribe Family Channel, BBJ. I want to thank Team Chocolate. And I want to say everybody is a star, but your shine is just different from mine, that's all. Sure. And I want to thank my dear friend, Sydney, and I appreciate you so much. And you know, we just going to keep on going until the wheels fall off. That's what we're going to do, okay?
That's right. That's
what we are going to do. You know, keep on going until the wheels fall off.
And when the wheels fall off, we'll pick them up and roll them.
Thank you. There you go. And the last two songs, like I said, are the songs that you submitted. You're going to love it. It's the one by Diana Ross that you co-wrote. And the last one will be You Don't Have to Be a Star by Billy and Marilyn. But in the meantime, I just want to say until next week, God bless all of y'all, and may the funk be with everybody out there. And you guys tune back in next week. And thank you very much, and love you, Sid. And we are
love
out.
You, girl. All right. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
We'll be right back. woman, then you will know why they call me when you want.
Baby, Thank you.